League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Friday, the 22nd of January, 2021. On the podcast today, Russ Mould, investment director at stockbroker AJ Bell, talks about stimulus, mergers and acquisitions, and dividends. And for the first time, Michael Taylor, full-time trader, talks about his strategy and Escape Hunt's acquisition news today. Plus, as always, at the end of the podcast, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can check out both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. We'll also see lots of other content. In fact, there's one there about the character group. There's a Powerhouse Energy webinar from last night. I was doing the questions and answers there in the intro, and well attended that was. And also at the top there of the page, there's our COVID-19 index. Check that out. Biggest rise of the day is Omega Diagnostics. That'll be popular, up 14.75%, 70 pence. Biggest faller, Hemogenics Pharmaceuticals, and that's down 5.4% at 7.8%. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, investment director at stockbroker AJ Bell. You all right, Russ?
Yeah, in good health, and it's sunny here in Brighton today, so that's a step forward as well. So how are you?
It's sunny here, but frosty. Really still frosty.
Yeah, it was cold this morning.
Yeah. Here we are. Better than rain. I hate rain, but anything but rain, you know?
It's chucked down for most of the weekend. I went for a walk around our local cricket club's field the other day. It was like a quagmire.
Yeah,
so, not that there's a lot going on there at the moment, obviously, but it was like an absolute bog. So, there we go.
But do you know what? Some of the stocks done quite well this week, and a friend of mine who sort of piggyback some of my investments there said, is this because of Joe Biden? She said, and I said, well, no, it's more because of my stock picking ability.
But
I was thinking, really, is there an overlap? I suppose there is between small caps in the UK and Joe Biden getting sworn in. I don't know.
Well,
really,
I think there's an element of in the jargon you would say is risk on, in that stock markets are welcoming, financial markets are welcoming Biden generally. I know that there were concerns that he would come out with some, you know, fairly swinging corporate tax increases and what the Americans would call progressive or liberal policies. But I think the fact that he's got a relatively limited majority in the Senate, i.e. the casting vote of the vice pres, means that maybe he won't get too carried away there. And he is already talking about very substantial fiscal stimulus. And, you know, what the stock markets feast off? Well, they feast off cheap money, and they love economic growth and corporate profits growth. So if he's going to start shoveling lots of money around, I think markets view that as a potentially positive thing. You've also got vaccination rollouts, and you've still got very loose monetary policy all the way around the world. So vaccine plus fiscal stimulus plus monetary stimulus plus a, I'll choose my words carefully, relatively uncontested US election. In the end, there was a handover of power. Means that stock markets at the moment are still doing their best to look through the current environment, which is clearly tricky. We're under lockdown, and you know the case numbers are still higher than obviously the authorities would like them, and we'd all would like them to be. And so when stock markets are bullish, you do often find that small caps can outperform because they're much more sensitive to the global economic environment, their local economy, and they're much more geared into its upturns. So yeah. I guess it does all fit together. I mean, markets have been recovering before Biden came in, before the US election, because of fiscal and monetary stimulus and vaccine hopes. But I guess he certainly hasn't done it any harm anywhere, put it that way.
Yeah, exactly. And I think if it is stability, like you say, and, you know, going forward, people sort of, you know what's happening. In fact, you know, one tweet won't change the direction of the stock market, you know, that's which is a bit silly. That's the way it was.
Well, Elon Musk has been capable of doing that occasionally in the past, but in one case of one particular stock rather than an entire stock market. I think, you know, we're still waiting to see what Biden's going to do. I mean, he signed a lot of executive orders this week. Some of the statements of intent from the narrow perspective of financial markets were the banning of the Canada to Nebraska pipeline. So he's clearly going to stick to his guns on hydrocarbons. He's talking about signing America up to Paris 2050. So again, he's the direction of travel is clear there in terms of his pro renewables, and there's going to be a lot of money thrown at green infrastructure, and he's anti oil. Equally, of course, if he's going to clamp down on fracking, that's going to restrict US oil production at a time when maybe the economy is going to get better and oil demand's going to go up. So perversely, that could actually help oil prices and oil stocks, which is something that we've talked about before. We're waiting to see what he's going to do in terms of corporate tax increases. He's talking about going from 21 to 28%, I think, which, and I saw Peter and Jeffrey saying that would knock about, I don't know, 9 or 10% off US corporate earnings per share. We're waiting to see what he's going to do in terms of social media and regulation. Whether he's going to look at Section 230 of the 1996 Communications Decency Act and start waving a big stick at the social media platforms. So the there are lots of questions still to be asked, but I think the one number the market's focusing on right now is fiscal stimulus. And with Janet Yellen coming in, it seems, as Treasury Secretary, and she was talking about, quote, going big this week on fiscal spending. Again, markets are looking at that, not worrying too much about how you fund that down the road, and just looking for it as an assistance to get us through the still difficult environment to a time when corporate earnings and dividends are starting to grow again.
Yeah, it's quite bullish talk, isn't it? Going big.
If
you saw Janet Yellen down the shop and you didn't know her, you wouldn't think now that she has the power that she has.
Well, I think you trip over her to start off with, because she's about 5'1", isn't she? Yeah. But, you know, which is still taller than my mum, I hasten to add. So I'm certainly not picking on Janet Yellen because of her diminutive stature. But, I mean, you can argue that America's already gone big. I mean, it took from 1776 to 2010 to rack up the first $13 trillion of federal deficit, and it's doubled that in the last 10 years. So I would personally argue that it's probably gone in big already, but Well, if you take that attitude, I think all it means is that interest rates just aren't going to go up, are they?
For a very,
very long time. Because as soon as they do, you're going to be much more sensitive to that cost increase because there's so much more debt around. So I can see why she's saying it, but there is in the end, you know, what was it Hoover said, blessed are our grandchildren, for they will inherit the national debt.
And like I say, I mean, as far as stock market is concerned, it's the only thing in town, Tina, there. But you've said quite a few times, and I quite like that phrase, and I sort of understand it, climbing a wall of worry. And do you know what I think is going to happen? I think once lockdown starts, we're going to have a sell-off. Because I think we are rallying towards vaccines coming out now. We're still having, you know, a lot of issues, a lot of negative press, but it's the wall of worry. But things are slowly improving on the vaccine front. And I think once we get to, lockdown lifting, I think then that'll be priced in pretty much, you know?
Yeah, well, it's intriguing. I've written about, we talked about them last week, stocks like Greggs and Whitbread and Crest Nicholson. And to be honest with you, what I'm actually trying to be too clever by half, I suspect, is actually wait for, the announcement, it's all okay, we can go back, we're going to ease the lockdown. And then I'm kind of hoping the stocks have a bit of a pop, and I can just knock them out, because I think then in the short term, that's as good as the news flow is going to get, quite frankly.
And then there
will be a bit of hard yards in terms of, how quickly is the recovery coming, and so on. So, and, there are clearly some stocks that look expensive that have priced in quite a lot of good news already, and you need to, look forward 2, 3, or 4 years to really argue that they're cheap. It doesn't mean that they're not good long-term investments, but it probably means that there have been some very, very healthy gains. But I mean, a lot of, we were talking last week, house builders, some of the retailers, Greggs, hoteliers, they're all up 50-60% in the last 3 or 4 months. And there will, at some stage, you'd expect this to be a consolidation or a pullback. Assuming that the economy is on the right track, I suspect that might be more of a chance to step in and pick a few bits up. But I wouldn't necessarily be hugely keen to chase them like a madman right now. No, I probably wouldn't, if the truth be told.
Yeah, exactly. You were saying there's some bits of M&A and...
And it's interesting. I mean, we've talked about in the past about how the, the UK stock market has underperformed on a serial basis for I mean, certainly since this isn't a political point, it's just a financial market bubble. But since the Brexit vote, the FTSE All Shares underperformed, 100 has underperformed. But equally, the FTSE 100 is still below where it was in 1999, for heaven's sake, at its peak. Now, that's partly because of its mix, but it has underperformed on a global stage. And so you're always looking at, is there some value there? And if there is, what's going to make people want to revisit it? And what caught my eye, there have been 15 or 20 bids for FTSE companies from 100 stocks, RSA and N10, down to small caps. And you think, hang on a minute. You've got private equity buyers, you've got trade buyers, and they're offering an average premium of nearly 50%. So if they think that they can still extract value from something when they're paying 20, 30, 50% above the market price, then maybe we're missing something here, and there is value, particularly from an overseas perspective, I admit, because the currency is still lower than it was 4.5 years ago at the time of the Brexit vote. So you'd seen, and some of these deals have begun to close. What slightly niggled me is that 4 of the 20 deals have now been scrapped. N10, Codemasters, Telecommunications and Elementis. Different reasons why. I guess what is interesting is that those deals that have gone down were generally stock or cash and stock. The deals that are going through are for cash. So I think that probably means that the investors are being pretty canny and they're worried that they're being fed overvalued paper themselves. The deals for cash are going through, which I think is a good sign. I'm a little bit nervous to see some deals go down, but equally, it's good that the cash deals are going through, and that's still, and the average premium on those is still 40-50%. So it leads me to think that there is value in the UK market. If you look, we know the FTSE 100 is a very odd index because it's very, very heavily slewed to oils, banks, insurers and miners, which are not industries that everybody warms to for either reasons of predictability, volatility, or even ethically. So it is a funny index, but I think if you look below that, I still think there is some value to be had there, less than there was 3 months ago because the market's gone up. But still, clearly, I think there are things out there that if you dig deep enough, that are out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what's the situation with dividends at the moment? What's that?
I mean, obviously, last year was a bit of a shocker in that overall you saw. I mean, on the numbers that we keep, and I do it by eyes, it's not going to be perfect, but you saw cuts of about 47 billion last year, payment dividends retained about 30 odd billion, and dividends restored of about 4 billion. But really, from June onwards, payments and restorations outpaced cuts. So the grief was all March, April, May last year, as you would expect, when we're all wondering what on earth was happening in terms of the pandemic and the global economy. The news generally has been better since then. And just early on this year, I just keep a check every week. And you've had, half a dozen cuts for 8 million quid. You've had about a dozen payments for nearly 450 million. And dividend restorations, we've had six companies this week just say we're either starting repayments now, like Grafton and Watkins Jones, or you've had TT Electronics, Headlam Arrow saying we will start repaying when we do our full year numbers in the spring. So, it's clear that the picture out there is very difficult. It's still very nervous, and it is easy to paint a black picture still. And the macro numbers are clearly still pretty average. The PMIs today have softened a little bit, but I still think we're coming back to companies a year ago prepared for a very, very negative scenario. And you're clearly, in some cases, seeing it still even then not quite work out as badly as they feared, and they've done a good job husbanding cash and managing costs. So you're seeing companies even now saying, well, actually, it's not as bad as we thought it was going to be 9 or 10, 12 months ago, and we're actually going to restart paying our dividends again. So I think that is an incremental positive for those who are looking for income or for UK equities. Again, without getting carried away, if we did end up with a very, very long lockdown and a double-dip recession, they might put their heads back below the parapet again. But at the moment, the trend looks to be going in the right direction there, at least.
Yeah, it's good. It'll be interesting to see, because we've never experienced anything like this, because, like I said, it's been, first of all, it was a technical recession, pretty much, but then all of a sudden, of course, companies who can't operate, who've got debt, who have to pay bills still, are slowly getting worse. Their balance sheets are getting shot apart.
Yeah.
And so it's, the longer it drags on for, the more casualties we'll have, and so we may go into double, triple dip recession. Who knows?
That's the thing. And also, at some stage, Mr. Sunak is clearly going to have to look at trying to do something about vaguely balancing the government's books with a debt, the borrowing this year of anything between 350 and 400 billion quid, or, sort of fifth of GDP. Even with interest rates where they are, that is still going to add to the government's annual interest burden of 45 to 50 billion pounds a year. He's going to want to do something about it. And, there are suggestions he's looking at, the old chestnuts like pensions tax relief. He's looking at capital gains tax. He's looking at corporation tax. So there was that issue of a wealth tax that was floated that I think seems to have been gently buried. Again, these are issues that we have to be aware of going forward. We already have a financial transactions tax for stamp duty, but it doesn't mean that he can't, the Spanish have just introduced one. It doesn't mean that he won't revisit that one again. So again, there may at some stage be, a cost associated with the important support that's been provided to businesses and individuals so far. And that could have a dampening effect on the degree of the recovery as well. So, things are by no means guaranteed to be all sweetness and light, but they still feel better than they did 10 months ago, thankfully. Mm-hmm. Not that that's saying much.
Yeah, exactly. And what about you, Russ? I mean, you look at a lot of figures, you read a lot of stuff. But generally, what's your thoughts in the next, let's say, 12 months? I mean, are you bearish? Are you bullish? What's your thoughts?
At the moment, I'm finding it, and I hate it, I'm finding it very hard to fight the sort of tidal wave of liquidity argument, because there is just so much cash sloshing around out there with QE, with money supply, with fiscal stimulus, and I don't feel comfortable with it, because you are slightly second-guessing when it's going to end. We all know bull markets end when the money runs out, and so if it is discussed before, you're looking at what's going to make the money run out, and tax increases would be one source. Rampant IPO activity, bad M&A, and particularly rampant secondary offerings in IPOs would all begin to suck up that cash. I think valuation-wise, the US makes me a little bit nervous, but I think Asia doesn't look bad, Japan's still okay, UK still not bad. So I think there are certain very hot pockets. I think the US makes me uncomfortable because of no disrespect to Robin Hood and those platforms, but there is a lot of punting around by retail investors in some pretty speculative stuff that doesn't make you comfortable. The SPAC boom doesn't make you comfortable. The froth in IPOs don't make you feel comfortable. But you're not seeing yet the sort of rampant for stock M&A, the sort of bonkers, valuations in all sectors that would lead you to be very uncomfortable. So at the moment, and also with money printing being the order of the day, and Janet Yellen saying go big, owning cash is not a nice place to be when they're busy going to be creating an awful lot more of it. How many things can you think of that go up in value when there's loads more of it lying around? Not much. Yeah. So that's money, which is something to think about. So the case for then for owning real productive assets is to cash. And so I think you're fighting that tidal wave at the moment.
Yeah, do you know what worries me, Russ, is that I see a lot of people on Twitter, and like you say, the Robin Hood traders who are new to it because there's lockdown happening, they've all set up sort of investment accounts, and quite a few of them, in fact, the majority of the seams are doing very well. And when money is that easy to be made, it's a bit worrying, isn't it? Because the stock market isn't easy, and I think having an easy year when you first start can set you up for a big fall.
Yeah, it isn't, and that's one of Charlie Munger's things. It isn't supposed to be easy, and let's face it, if it was easy, we'd all be doing it sat on the settee. And if we're all sat on the settee doing it, there'd be nothing for us to invest in because there'd be nobody out there doing anything productive. So I think, that's one of the things that does make me nervous. But there is this tidal wave of liquidity. So, that whole argument of, well, bull markets end when the money runs out, at the moment isn't there. I'm acutely conscious of that piece that the FT put in this week about from Seth Klarman to his investors, the legendary hedge fund investor, saying that people are just feeling that they're immune to risk and inured to risk because they think central banks have got their back. And that is clearly the counter argument to the tidal wave of liquidity. Because when that money dries up, you will find that there's a big trap door waiting for you. Mm. So again, trying to be too cute and time the top isn't going to be the right thing to do. If there is going to be an accident, it could be like last year, a completely exogenous, unforecastable one, because they're generally the things that get you. So again, it's to protect yourself. It's don't chase things that you don't understand. Don't overpay just in the view that you'll be able to flip it on to somebody else. Stick to businesses with good fundamentals. Stick to businesses with good balance sheets that can withstand an extended lockdown, because they won't get into trouble. They won't come and dilute you by issuing shares. So I think those things will offer you still protection. If there is going to be some lumps and bumps along the way, which, let's face it, history suggests there will be, but I think the wave of liquidity, very hard to resist right now, doesn't make me comfortable. But again, sticking to your disciplines will see you through any difficulty and fall that we get going, volatility that we get going forwards.
Mm-hmm. Well, stuff. Russ, thanks that fella.
And keep well.
We'll speak next week.
Forward to it.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Michael Taylor, and known as Shift and Shares on Twitter, of course. And Michael, thanks for coming on the podcast, fella.
Thanks for having me on, Justin. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, you've never been on before. We know each other from Twitter, and I've read your stuff in Investors Chronicle, and you're a full-time trader. Bit of investor trader, but what do you do more of? Do you trade more? Do you hold stock more? What's the deal?
Yeah, so I'm more of a trader. I'm not the best of investors. I tend to look at charts and price action to make decisions. So I do look at fundamentals. I will check income statements, balance sheets, things like that. But that's not the main principle of what I do. I'd rather buy a bad stock with a good chart. Yeah. Than a good stock with a bad chart, if that makes sense.
Why not buy a good stock with a good chart?
Well, they're even better. <I know. laughs> you just have to find them.
That's it, you see. I mean, that's the thing. I've said that all the time. That, you know, you can buy a good company at a bad price and lose money or sit on a loss for a long time, you know? And you can buy a bad company at a good price and then instantly be in profit, but it may be not sustainable. So the ideal combo, isn't it? Good company, good price. And in fact, come on now, because we both hold Escape Hunt, and they released an RNS, which I think is a cracker. Initially, the RNS came out, and the share price dropped, because as always, whenever private investors see placing, they go, oh my God, it's a placing! And then, but the placing was cracking, wasn't it? It was like, taking into account the share price has risen for the last 2 days, 3 days, by about 15%, and the placing was at 17.5 pence. A 4% discount, but it wouldn't have been that a couple of days ago. So that's a cracking deal, I think. I mean, have you read through it? Have you had time, because we're recording now, have you had time to read through it?
Yeah, so I was inside on the deal, and I've followed my money in this place and quite pleased with it, yeah. I think it looks really good. Taking the Belgium and the France franchise agreements, I think that will... it's not going to be as distracting. So I asked Graham this, and he said he thinks it's a good acquisition. I guess we'll see, but I'm quite pleased with it. It's only 1.3 million, I think, heavily oversubscribed.
Yeah.
Director taken 500k. So as far as deals go, yeah, I think it's pretty good.
Do you know what? One times average EBITDA. That's phenomenal. What they're doing here, I just said on Twitter, I think this is the only leisure company actually expanding during the COVID lockdowns. Most are distressed, you know, a lot of distress, a lot of having problems. These guys luckily raised funds at the right time, and they've been quite prudent. They've got a digital arm that they just set up during lockdowns, doing very well, very high margin, but gross 80%. And this is exactly what they're doing right. And I've said this in a couple of videos that I've done. I said, they are now seeing benefits from the lockdown. Because, of course, you've got commercial landlords looking for people to fill their units because a lot of companies are going through. But also, like this, they would not ever have been able to do this deal pre-COVID, would they? One times EBITDA, you know?
I think it would have been difficult, yeah. And as you say, with the rents and things like that, they're in quite an advantageous position. So, yeah, it's high risk, definitely, I think, because they're not profitable. So, you know, we have to class it as speculative. But, you know, they're coming into a good position now. It's a great chart, nice trend. Directors are backing it. So I'm happy to hold. I think this could go a long way. But, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, but the thing is, this deal, 17 sites they've got now. Literally, pre-lockdown in March, they had 11. And now they've got Heads of Terms signed on Milton Keynes as well. That's 18. That's pretty, if my maths is right, it's over a 50% growth in physical sites since the lockdown started. And they say, this deal here will bring them to Wizz. I did highlight it, but cash flow positive, obviously in normal times. So this is a... It'll take them to... This will start there now being profitable on this thing. And then they've got 18 with Milton Keynes. I just think... Right now, we are waiting for, you know, some positive figures, which is happening. Vaccine figures are positive. But, I mean, once lockdown and the hospital admissions go down, this will fly. It's a leisure sector stock. You know, it's one of those things we know full well. I mean, you're a trader, right? How long have you held these for?
Quite a while. So I first met Graham and the board at the... Oh, it was a while ago now. Last February, before this all kicked off. So it was the Master Investor show, or some show in February. Met the board there, was quite keen on the idea. The price was a lot higher then. Obviously collapsed, like everything, at the end of February, early March. Knew they wanted to raise and make some money. So I waited for a while, got in before the placing, took the placing, which was 7.5 pence, I think. So this is a long-term hold for me. And I guess as a trader, people think you're always really short-term, and certainly that is the case. For example, I bought remote monitoring systems today, sold it a few minutes later on that RNS. But this is a long-term trade for me,
Well, it's an investment, isn't it? What's the difference between a trade and investment? Because this, in my mind, right, they're nowhere near. They've got a target now, a short to mid-term target of 20 sites. They're almost there. They signed Heads of Terms on 18 already. And that was not supposed to be... I had penned in end of this year 20. And they're almost there. Two more sites are almost there. They always say that they're on advanced discussions on further sites in the UK beyond Milton Keynes. Mm-hmm. This one, by the way, they said the sites now should be capable of supporting positive group EBITDA, positive cash generation, and once the new site performance has matured. So after COVID, so that's looking good. I just genuinely think there's a roadmap here. There are 50 they want to head towards. And they said that you spoke to Graham, I've spoken to Graham as well, and I've spoken to Richard. They're a very sharp bunch of guys here operating this. John Story himself took $500,000 in this. He's already got a big chunk already. I've chatted to him quite a few times, and he's very sharp. And I think the setup here is very good, and a market leader, premium brand. I think after lockdown, it's only going one way. You know, when I first started buying this, they were just under seven million market cap. They're over $4 million in cash. And I thought, okay, the COVID, has been oversold here. It's been overdone. And I just think this is one of those rare occasions, right? We see a micro cap that could have a sustained rise over several years. Normally, small caps, they need to go back to the market again and again and again, and they'll pop and drop on news. They'll be very volatile. I think this is going to be one of those stocks that will literally, you can just sit there and hold for a while. It's one of those rare things, I think. I genuinely like it. That's why I've got a decent chunk of them. I like it a lot. But I think, Mike, you should call yourself an investor here.
I can't do that, Justin. No, a long-term trade. But is that the
why
same?
Why are you so adverse to saying you call yourself an investor? Why?
I think I just... if the price was to really plummet, I would sell. All of my decisions are based on price. And I like this company for a lot of reasons. But I would not really want to average down too much. But at the same time, I've got so much of it. It would be almost impossible to sell without trashing the price. I guess I'm locked in for the long term.
There we are. You're an investor, Mike. You're an investor.
I'm an investor. Okay. You got it out of me, Justin.
Stuff. How many stocks do you have at the moment? How many do you generally hold?
Far too many. I think between 30 and 40. I've been trying to sell today.
Yeah.
The problem is in this market, there's just so many good stocks to buy. I mean, things are breaking out. Mm. There's so many stocks beating expectations. Now, a cynic like me would say that management had guided everyone down in order to set up for an easy beat. But the companies are just performing so well recently. So I just keep buying them. I mean, you would have to be mad to short this market. Is it all going to fall down and end in tears? Maybe. Who knows? But I think to get a shot now, you're stepping in front of a runaway mine train, which is incredibly dangerous, I would imagine.
Yeah. I know, speaking a couple of times, sometimes I find it a bit unnerving that a lot of people, I mean, even my portfolio hit an all-time high, and it keeps doing it. It seems like on almost a weekly, and I see lots of other people saying that. And I'm thinking, you know, when you're all, like, for want of a better phrase, in one side of the boat, you know, you think it's going to tip up surely. But like you said, there's no other game in town at the moment, is there? I mean, there is positivity looking forward. I feel when lockdown is unlocked, when we get unlocked from lockdown, I think we'll have a bit of a sell-off. I think we're rallying towards that. Climbing a wall of worry, and I think we'll have a bit of a dip when it actually happens, maybe. Or not straight away, but I mean just after, I think, because the stock market is quite buoyant, isn't it, considering where we are economy-wise?
At the moment, yeah. I mean, 3 months is a long, long time away, so who knows in that time. But yeah, when the going's good, you've just got to enjoy it and try and make some money, absolutely.
Yeah, and when you trade there, Mike, because I've tried trading, I can't do it. Because what I need is enough conviction to put a decent chunk of money into a stock. And like I said, with the small caps, you can't really, you know, jump in and out with a big. And also, I've got to, you know, be confident in a stock enough to hold it for a while and put decent chunks. So when you're trading, do you have a particular, you know, margin of profit you're looking for, or did it change depending on the stock?
It changes depending on the stock and depending on the setup. So, for example, Kainos this morning announced good results. So I was in the uncrossing trade in the auction, and I've sold that already for a quick profit because it was, for me, a momentum short-term trade based on good news and institutions and everyone pushing the price of that stock up. So I don't really know anything about Kainos other than that they had good results. And so very often I'll buy and sell companies. I don't really have any clue what they do. And to be honest, I don't need to know either. So, I mean, if you want to hold with some conviction, obviously you probably would want to know that. But to me, it's just a trade based on, you know, a chart on the screen. And if that's all it is, then that's all it is.
Yeah. Sometimes, though, I've found, right, when I first started investing, almost in a dot-com boom, I was jumping in and out of stocks because they were like just doubling overnight. And
that must have been fun.
Yeah, it was nuts because a company just announced that they're changing into a dot-com. You know, that's all they'd say. I mean, it'd be a rubbish little sort of tiddler on AIM, pretty much. And they announced they're going to change into a dot-com, and it doubled. But I was trading like a maniac, in and out, jumping in and out. But over time, I lost money. I mean, over that time, the dot-com bubble.
That's no good.
Yeah, when it broke down, I thought, what I should have just done is, and I realise now, with a bit more experience, just, you know, actually do a bit more research and look at a bit more long-term, because I think it's very hard. And like I said, if you look at the stats on all these trading websites, it doesn't bode well for new traders, is it? Like 73% of people who trade lose money, you know? So it's very hard, isn't it, jumping in and out, to know what you're doing, really, you know?
Well, you've got to have a strategy. I mean, far too many, and I was guilty of this as well. I would sit on Twitter and I would look for things to buy, and I would look at what other people were saying and sort of rely on other people, if that makes sense, to find trades. And, you know, you make money like that, but you can also lose it. And whereas now I've got a clear strategy. I know what I'm looking for. I know what I want to see. And then it just becomes a case of doing it and repeating it. And if you can get 4 or 5 setups that you like and that you trade, you don't really need to be in everything to make money. You absolutely have to have a strategy. Otherwise, you won't ever make any money trading. It's hard work.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? Absolutely. And I was looking at how much I've got a spreadsheet out, looking at diversification, all this stuff. You know, people sort of diversification. And the trouble is, a lot of the time we can over diversify. And I had a kind of spreadsheet out to get the kind of gains I want. I should never own more than 10 stocks ever, you know, and I should likely be closer towards 5, actually, as long as you sort of, you can understand, you know, if you understand a bit of risk and reward and stuff. But, so it's funny, isn't it? Yeah, in this market, there's so many things jumping around, it's quite easy to just put a bit of money into everything, but then it just dilutes your potential return, doesn't it, I suppose? But so how many are you looking to hold then? How many got now? 30, you said?
I think between 30 and 40. I mean, I've probably got positions in other accounts that I can't even remember, which is quite dangerous. And that's when I know I need to start cutting down. Because when you're forgetting about stocks, that's, you know, yeah, just absolutely. Definitely not good.
I know, yeah. That's unbelievable. Yeah. It's like finding money in the back of a sofa or something. Oh, hang on, I got to
well,
stop
not, not if I've gone down, Justin. No, not if I've gone down.
But you've got to be sure. How are you going to organise that then? What are you going to do? How do you not know? I've got one account, and I understand. That's the problem. I never take place in this because I'm basically like to be a bit anal and controlling over what I hold. And I got one account, and I say, and I got all my mm-hmm. stuff in there. So how do you get to the stage where you don't know what you've got? Does that worry you?
Because you buy so many things, and yeah, you can put stop losses in. But yeah, I guess by the end of the day, I check and look over what I've got and do a review and work out what I'm going to sell tomorrow. So you do need to keep track of it. I mean, I find anything over 30 just far too much. Usually it's like less than 20. Mm. But as I said, in this market, you know, I get a breakout alert from my trading platform and then I'll buy it because the chart looks good. I've already looked at it. I know what price I want to see. A dealing ticket pops up because I've already preset it, and it's just a case of buying it and then putting the stop in.
Mm-hmm. What platform do you use?
ShareScope and IG's Level 2 dealer. Yeah. The good thing about Level 2 is Level 2 dealer is that you can set an alert and have the dealing ticket actually pop up. Yeah. So when the ask hits a certain price, the ticket pops up. And then you just pop your shares in and you can either hit the ask or you can go on the RSP and deal through a market maker. Mm-hmm. So it saves several seconds if everyone's looking at the same level as well.
Yeah, no, you're right. You have to have a strategy and, you know, and it takes time, doesn't it? And trial and error to get there. And that's, I always say that.
A lot of time,
Exactly. Because do you know what? Investing or trading is one of these things that people think they can just jump into and just start doing, you know? And in no other profession would people start doing this. You know, it's like you never just, you know, assume you're going to get a tennis racket and be in Wimbledon next year, you know, or just start, you know, cutting up someone's brain in a surgery and thinking you're a brain surgeon. It takes a long time. It's like any trade, isn't it? It's like, you know, be a plumber or anything like that. It takes a long time to do it and get it. Not only that, you can learn the theory behind it, but then, you know, like for example, a plumber or builder or bricky, but then you've got to do it and practice it, you know, over and over again, haven't you? And with money, it becomes all that more emotional because you've got money involved, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if you pass your driving test, you're not an expert driver, are you? It's experience. And yeah, with money, it just exaggerates emotions, doesn't it? I mean, everyone can make money on a demo account because you cut your losses and you run your winners. Mm. And it's that simple. But as soon as you see, you know, how much you're down and that's real money, you have loss aversion and you don't want to sell. Yeah. And that can be quite difficult for some people to get over. Some people never get over it. And for years and years, they hold losses of like 50% plus that they've just never sold. Yeah. Whereas now I'll sell out, you know, it'll hit my level and I'll just get out. I never have a problem taking a small loss because that loss can easily become a much bigger one. It's when you get the big losses that, you know, you know you've messed up.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you know what? I never have. Sometimes I'll just cut straight away and I think, it's solid, I'm out. And but losses don't really bother me. I look at my portfolio as a whole and I'm thinking, I think this, if I change my mind on something, I lack patience. I just have to get out, you know, and I'd say I'm gone and that's it. I think sometimes it's paid off. Sometimes I've been, you know, too impatient, but generally it's paid off. I think once you've made the decision, you've got to go for it. And never look back as well. I see people looking back at shares that they've sold and see it rising. What's the point? What's the point of doing that? There's no point. Yeah. There's no point.
I had a penny for every share I'd done that with. I'd be rich.
Exactly. Marvellous stuff. Yeah. Michael, thanks for coming on, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future, Fana. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks, Justin. Take care. Thank you.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They're at five. Argo Blockchain Mining up 13.45% to 81 pence. At four, Abingdon Health up 2% to 105. At three, Omega Diagnostics up 14 or 15% to 70 pence. At two, Alien Metals down 4.5 to 1.05. And at one, Ridgecrest up 35%, 2.85. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. In fact, Escapant's there, number one. Also, Trackwise Designs, Rehobold Resources, Vela Technologies, Union Jack Oil, and most viewed is also Remote Monitoring Systems, Certification Commission update at Vela as well there, most viewed, Vassar in there, most viewed, and Union Jack Oil, and Vast as well. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling Yuzu Mango IQ Mix Hydration Mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to iqbar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's iqbar.com, promo code KELLER20.